It's Mark Yeagy here, wealth architect and lifestyle investor. Let's take your life to the next level. Welcome to the Wealth Architect Podcast.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Yeagy. Welcome to another Wealth Architect Podcast. Glad you're here today. Glad we have a really cool guest. I'm pretty sure we have a lot in common, so I'm excited to introduce him to you. He is the founder of Family Office Bitcoin, right? Three things that are cool, or two things, Family Office and Bitcoin. A registered investment advisor serving family offices with $50+ million in assets. He currently builds institutional-grade Bitcoin allocations for long-term capital stewards who think in generations, not just quarters. And with 20 years in traditional finance and deep expertise in monetary economics, he focuses on proper implementation, which basically includes secure custody, very important in Bitcoin world, tax efficiency and governance structures built to withstand volatility. He's also the author of Bitcoin and the Family Office, which is an intelligent introduction for the ultra affluent. Let's welcome Eric Runge today. Hey, Eric, how are you? Welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Great to be here.
Great to have you here. So some of my favorite topics, family office, managing wealthy people's money, helping them get away from the programming that is Wall Street and into something that is more wealth-oriented, not just, you know, buy a smattering of you know, mutual funds or whatever. But let's get into the other topic first, and that's Bitcoin. But before we get into either one of them, let's do this. Let's start with what you do and how you got into it.
Thank you. Yeah. So I started in the investment business in 2005, worked at a small chop shop that's no longer in existence. They were not doing anything illegal, but it was just a standard boiler room type of a place. That was never a fit. So I moved over to another mid-sized company. Ultimately, in the mid-2010s, opened my own firm called Veritas Wealth Management at the time. And so I've been in this business 20 years working with retail clients, as you mentioned, on investments, financial planning, wealth management. I had also been studying some economists like Gary North, Murray Rothbard, Thomas Sowell, and those left a really deep impression upon me about which I could do nothing at the time. There was no connection in my mind to mutual fund sales and economic theory or the gold standard. And so that just lingered in my mind. But ultimately, I heard somebody talking about Bitcoin. His name was Robert Breedlove. And that answered all of the questions that had lingered in the back of my mind about the problem with our US monetary system. And so I ultimately figured out a way to build my business and rebuild my business around Bitcoin and Bitcoin-centric advice. And at some point, I just decided this is what I was put on this earth to do, is talk about Bitcoin to family offices and high net worth investors. And so I made that switch in the early 2020s, ultimately founded, sort of rebranded to Veritas Bitcoin Strategies, Family Office Bitcoin, and really have never looked back.
I mean, that's great. And the fact that you came from an Austrian background, reading Murray Rothbard, you know, and landed on Bitcoin, and now you get to talk about it all the time. Sounds a lot like what I've gone through. And you know, I've gone through the frustrations of having people look at you like a deer in the headlights while you sit there and talk about 21 million coins and the scarcity aspect of it. So let's talk about Bitcoin. I mean, that's kind of your specialty, right? So your job is, if I had to strip away all the stuff, is to convince people that Bitcoin is the future. Am I right?
Yes and no. I'm not in the convincing business. I am in the giving family offices the structure and education to be able to justify Bitcoin to their investment committee. So somebody, I can't really take a skeptic from zero to Bitcoin, although I'm happy to chat. Really, it's for family offices who know they need to do something about it, but just don't. Bitcoin is a sticky place right now. You can go deep down the rabbit hole. It's really to help be that bridge from what they're used to sort of a Bitcoin-centric style thinking.
So what do you do about it? Because I could tell you that if you're on the end of managing people's money, you certainly don't want to take a lot of crazy chances. So how do you position it such that people don't feel like they're taking crazy chances, but that at the same time, they are being exposed to something that could be the future?
Well, you have to understand first what Bitcoin is at a deep enough level, and I'm talking the client now, to be able to know or feel confident that it has unique characteristics that could very likely continue to be valuable to people in the future. And so if so, it's like, if we think about diamonds, nobody is really shorting diamonds over the long haul because True. Everybody understands that diamonds are scarce, unique, very valuable. Same with gold. Maybe short-term people are shorting it, but long-term people are long on those items. When people start to understand Bitcoin's unique characteristics and that it's really not reproducible, it reframes the discussion from this is a very volatile, risky asset to, gosh, maybe this thing is unique. Maybe it has value, that sort of thing. Now, that doesn't eliminate short-term volatility risk by any means, and it's certainly not a promise of future performance. But once Bitcoin is reframed from a casino asset or a trading asset to something which has maybe 100-year, 500-year, 1,000-year value, now the floor is laid. Now it's a matter of how much Bitcoin do I want? How much volatility in my portfolio can I accept? Because Bitcoin is really volatile in fiat terms. But then the other part of that bridge is like a family office may be restricted, even if the principal really likes Bitcoin and wants to buy, you know, 10% in his whole portfolio, he might be restricted by his committee or his IPS from buying it at all. So what I have done is built downside risk mitigated structures, which capture a minimal portion of Bitcoin's downside, but still participating in meaningful upside. So there's all kinds of options and things, but once people start to understand what Bitcoin really truly is, then it's just a matter of how do you buy in and in what way.
It's so funny. I don't envy you sometimes in trying to convince people, because I got into Bitcoin in like 2020, 2021 in that area. And to me, it was, you know, going down the Saylor rabbit hole and watching, you know, 1,000 hours of listening to Michael Saylor with his engineering background talk about Bitcoin. And then started, you know, getting into it and started telling everybody, evangelizing. But, you know, a lot of times you can pull people, but they don't want to go. And so now I'm like you, I don't really try to convince them. I, you know, if they want to know, I'll do a couple things to educate them. But you did say something there a minute ago that I want to talk about. Bitcoin is volatile, right? We can't say that an asset that hit $126,000 a few months ago and was trading, you know, in the low $60,000 area just a couple of months ago is not volatile. I mean, that's a 50% correction. On the other hand, there are stocks that go down 90% and recover, or sometimes don't recover. There are bonds. You can look at the treasuries, which are down more than 50% in just a few years, and that's supposed to be the safest asset that we have out there. So, what do you tell people about the volatility, and how do you gauge that? How do you wedge that into a portfolio where people aren't used to having some kind of a foreign asset that they're not used to, you know, talking about, and that all of a sudden it's volatile and that they have to go and now justify that they got into? How do you weigh all of that with a portfolio allocation?
There's like a few ways to think about it. If I have a traditional 60-40 public markets portfolio, the research shows that 0.5% allocated to Bitcoin will not increase my risk in any, you know, substantial way, yet does help to participate in some asymmetric upside potential. So we're talking a tweak there and minor diversification. That's not what really gets me out of bed in the morning. That's something that I do, but that's not that exciting. It's more about thinking in Bitcoin-centric terms. Now, whether or not somebody ever thinks, that Bitcoin is ultimately going to become the world's reserve currency, I don't know if it's going to, because I don't know the future. But where we're at in the adoption cycle very strongly appears to be its functioning as a reserve asset, a strategic reserve asset. It's competing with gold right now, or trying to. So it's like if you're asking a technical question, how do we figure out how much to allocate? It depends. Are we 60-40 centric? Are we private credit, private equity, real estate heavy? Depending on what a person's current portfolio is, will start to answer how much Bitcoin we ought to hold. But what I've seen is if you have on-chain Bitcoin at full volatility, I mean, it's good to own some of that depending on who you are. that has a different risk profile from a downside risk mitigated ETF stock Bitcoin portfolio. And so it's just a matter of who the person is, what their risk tolerance is, and that sort of thing.
Interesting. Yeah. So what do you say to people that are like, well, I need to have some of it, but I really like real estate. Okay. So that let's leave that for a second. And with the real estate analogy, what I always do is say, look, if we're going to be talking about money, we need to be talking about value, not necessarily price, because you can look at, well, they used to say 1 ounce of gold in 1930, which would buy you one man's finely tailored suit. And today you could say 1 ounce of gold will buy you a man's finely tailored suit. And, you know, that's basically says that there's inflation. And if you don't measure things on real terms, you're just talking about price, and price has inflation already built into it. And you're kidding yourself. In Bitcoin, if you look at 2019, it might have taken 200 Bitcoin to buy a house, right? Or more than that. But if you look at it today, it might take 6 or 7 or 8 Bitcoin to buy that same house. So price and value are two different things, and it all has to do with the denominator, right? And so if you're talking about real estate has some really great qualities, especially when it comes to taxation and quote unquote appreciation and phantom depreciation. But what does Bitcoin have in relation to real estate when it comes to an investment?
In relation to real estate, meaning like in terms of like absolute value, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that sort of thing. I mean, how do you answer the people that are like, well, it's volatile, and then you can kind of say, well, look, it's not price we're looking at, it's value that we're looking at.
Yeah, and it's not that I would tell somebody you should dump your real estate. That would be foolish to say.
Correct.
In a lot of different circumstances. It's if we're comparing Bitcoin to real estate, and that comparison does happen a lot, especially among the family office crowd, because it's a question of, in their minds, utility. Bitcoin has no utility a lot of times is the underlying objection or concern, whereas my real estate has cash flow. People can live in it. I can sell it at a cap gain. Now I can sell Bitcoin at a cap gain as well if it's up, but it doesn't have cash flow. The thing is, that's completely true, and there's no apology to be made for that. Bitcoin is not designed to have a cash flow. It's just an apples to oranges comparison.
It is.
Real estate has value, but one could argue as a store of value, real estate is overinflated, generally speaking, because of fiat currency. And what I mean by that is, if you take fiat that's draining value at a rate of, I don't know, it's lost 97% of its value since 1913, people know that they can't park $100 million in the bank, because 10 years from now, even though it's $100 million, it's going to be worth less than $100 million is today by a significant margin. And so, well, where do they go? They go to stocks, they go to real estate, other places that are going to hopefully increase in value quicker than the rate of monetary inflation. Well, real estate is a huge portion of that. And so consequently, there are a lot of homes owned by high-level real estate investors that they may not even live in. They just buy them and, for example, sit vacant. And what that does is it artificially drives up the price of real estate. But those investors are not going to put their money not in that real estate, because they know that it's an excellent store of value. And so in my view, the real estate market could potentially be overinflated just because of fiat currency itself. So as Bitcoin gains, now I'm going to speculate a little bit on this. As Bitcoin gains more and more traction and it pulls the price, as more people start to store their wealth in Bitcoin as opposed to real estate, I think it may even out the price and pull some of that back in terms of real estate. Maybe not in terms of popping a bubble, but I think it will just tend to even things out a little bit more.
Yeah. Hey, it's Mark Yeagy here to tell you about our cash flow machine trading program that's designed to teach you how to make safe, reliable income. Now, we shoot for 2-4% a month of income and growth in your portfolio. And we have courses to teach you how to do this yourself or inside a mastermind community. And the best part of that is it only takes about 20 minutes a week to implement. Now, while 2-4% a month doesn't sound like much, I show you exactly how we took my IRA from $111,000
to over $500,000 in just 19 months without huge risk. I'm not telling you this to brag, just to show you that you could do this too. So to learn more about this program, go to cashflowmachine.io. That's cashflowmachine.io, and you can learn more.
So the question that's popping up in my mind, we've got a person with a $10 million portfolio or something, and that person is not exposed to Bitcoin. Of course, they've heard about it. And you mentioned something early on in the podcast that you'll help people protect the downside on it. Even though we know that statistically, if it's a small portion of your portfolio, it's not a huge amount of risk overall. How do you protect the downside on a volatile asset like Bitcoin?
Yeah, so if we're talking straight volatility with on-chain Bitcoin, i.e. you're just owning regular real Bitcoin, just full disclosure, there's no downside protection that my firm at least offers. There is custody, I don't want to say custody protection, but that's like losing your keys and that sort of thing. Yes. But as far as volatility protection, what I have done in collaboration with Calamos, who is the third largest alternative asset manager in the country, is build downside risk mitigated Bitcoin ETF stock portfolios. And so we will use instruments like ETFs run by Calamos that will trade options on the CBOE, the Bitcoin index, that prevent a significant portion of downside. And then, so we'll build portfolios from there using those, spot Bitcoin, stocks like Strategy, MicroStrategy stock, sure, that sort of thing. So that's how we do that.
Interesting. So, you know, you touched on this, and I'm sure this is an issue that comes up in family office discussions. If you're not going to go the route of the Calamos wrapper with the hedge fund using options to protect the downside a bit, what do you do if somebody just says, look, I want to put $1 million in Bitcoin? How do you advise them to hold it, store it, keep it, protect it, all those kinds of things? Or do you?
I definitely do. If they want to come through my firm, we use a company called BitGo, which has secure 2 of 3 multi-signature storage. And so to break that down into plain English, okay, when I buy Bitcoin, what I will get with any wallet, hot wallet or cold wallet, is a key. And that's a 12 or 24 word passphrase, wherein if I have that key, I have access to the Bitcoin. If I lose the key and somebody else gets it, now they have access to my Bitcoin. It doesn't matter if it's registered in my name or your name or somebody else's name. If I have the keys, I have the coins, that's that. It's like if we didn't register cars to owners and whoever had access to the car keys was the ipso facto owner of the car.
Yeah,
that's what it actually is like in the Bitcoin space. So one key is less secure. If I can access my Bitcoin with one key only, if I lose my key, my coins are gone. But if I have 3 keys and it takes any 2 of the 3 keys to access those, now I can store one with my attorney. I can maybe put one in my house. Maybe I loan, you know, not loan one, I keep one at your house because you're my friend, that sort of thing. Now, if somebody breaks in my house and wants to steal my $1 million worth of Bitcoin, we're going to have to call up the attorney that late at night. Right. And we're going to have to get access. So you see, my point is that a 2 of 3 multi-sig is a diversified approach and discourages from an incentive structure somebody to steal my Bitcoin. It's called a $5 wrench attack. They can't just buy a wrench, yep, whack me on the head and take my Bitcoin because it's much harder for them. So it disincentivizes them. Okay, so that's multi-sig in a nutshell. So a solid, secure multi-signature setup is what we use through BitGo. And then we just manage the on-chain Bitcoin for the client. And then we can utilize things like tax loss harvesting. If Bitcoin has a loss, we can sell and rebuy, realize the loss, that sort of thing. So as far as advising on allocations, like I said, that's all about the individual client. Yeah. But as far as just, can we hold on-chain Bitcoin? Yeah, absolutely. That was really important to me to be able to build out.
Nice. Makes a lot of sense, but that's a whole different science. It's multi-sig, single sig, all those kinds of things for holding Bitcoin, but certainly want to put it out here on this podcast because there's a lot of people who don't know anything about it. And, you know, there's a saying that we know in Bitcoin, not your keys, not your coins, right? So if you have your coins, as we learned in 2022, I think it was, with FTX, you know, you had it on an exchange and they were doing some funny business with all that Bitcoin that was on the exchange, and a lot of people lost a lot of money. So you got to have
Yeah, and
control of it.
I can say that's a really good point. And to that point, one thing I do see among a lot of investors is they don't really even understand that there are a set of keys.
Right.
Because Coinbase, for example, nothing against them, but they've made it so easy to open an account
Yeah.
that it feels like opening a Robinhood account and I can buy stocks at Robinhood. Well, if I can buy Bitcoin at Coinbase, but not understand that there's such a thing as private keys, that's a major security gap. And for a family office, for example, that takes governance and security really important, takes it very seriously. That's something that a lot of family offices don't even know. They don't even realize that there are such a thing as keys on
Yeah.
Binance and Coinbase. So that's one of the things that I help sort of try to bring to light.
That's great. I love it. I love what you're doing out there. I mean, it's an important part. We're in the very beginning stages, everybody. I know it feels like it's been around for a while, and it has, but we're just getting started. So I love what you're doing out there, Eric. Let me ask a question here.
Thank
I
you.
know you have a book, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about the book, where people can get it, and then where they can find out about you.
Yeah, thank you. So the book is actually forthcoming. It's in the final stages of publishing right now, and this will be my first book. The book essentially builds it gives family offices the structure and even permission, if I could speak like that. Like I said before, to justify Bitcoin to their board. It
Sure.
reframes it through careful reasoning and analysis from being the casino asset that most people think of it as to actually being the serious asset that I believe it to be. So it's it, it at this point in history, people don't really have a category, I think, in their minds for Bitcoin as a serious asset, probably due to the clown show that is the rest of cryptocurrency.
That's right.
Because there's so many cryptos. There was a Trump coin, which I don't know what was going on with that, but there's been rug pulls. The HawkTooey girl did a rug pull. Crypto is just a hot mess out there. And Bitcoin, unfortunately, unjustly gets lumped in with the both of them. So I think it's understandable. But my whole goal is to help people to see why Bitcoin needs to be taken a little bit more seriously. And you can only do that through study and analysis. And so that's the whole
Yeah.
goal.
Yeah. Good. I love it. And how can people find out about you, the book, all those kinds of things, maybe do business with you or go further?
Yeah, thank you. My website is called familyofficebitcoin.com. It's not called that, that's the web address.
Okay.
My email address is eric@veritaswealth.net. So that's how people can get hold of me.
Great. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about what you do. I mean, it's a niche thing, but even what you're doing is more of a niche thing as well. But I have a feeling that niche is going to grow and become even more important as we move forward in the Bitcoin world. So thanks a lot for being bringing your time and your wisdom to the Wealth Architect podcast today.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. And everybody else who's listening and watching, remember what I always say: never give up your power and your health, your wealth, or your time. Have a great day, and I'll see you next time on the Wealth Architect podcast. Have a great day, everybody.
You've been listening to the Wealth Architect Podcast with Mark Yeagy. Follow us on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe on YouTube. Share and tell your friends. See you soon.